Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite. My name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In today's episode, I had the pleasure of meeting and speaking to Dr. Ian Tong, Chief Medical Officer of Included Health. The two of us discussed telehealth use versus in-person care, and more specifically, the racial and ethnic differences in this use of care. We concluded the conversation with how telehealth use has continued to expose more benefits for patients and for the industry through examples like improvements in reimbursement policies and in addressing health equity issues. Hello, Ian. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Brianna. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you. So to get started, I first just wanted to fill in our listeners and readers on what it is that you do, you know, what is your role and what is the mission of your organization, Included Health?
Yeah, happy to talk to you a little bit about Included Health. We're really a new kind of healthcare company. We are a complete integrated healthcare delivery platform that is designed to support the unique healthcare journey of each person. And we do that a couple different ways. We have a virtual care practice. An easy way to think about us is, you know, a 50-state virtual care practice that can address the physical ailments of patients, but also the behavioral health issues that they may encounter. And then we also have a really robust navigation platform. So the goal there is to make sure that we can individualize patient experiences and journeys, whether they have those physical or behavioral health issues, or they need help navigating our really complex healthcare system. And we do all of that at scale. The platform is really to make sure that, you know, we can take each individual person, put them into our system, and we integrate the entire part of their journey. So if there's someone who is, has trouble trying to figure out their network, for instance, someone's in network or out of network, or they're trying to figure out how they're going to finance their next part of their healthcare journey, we can help them with all of those issues on the navigation side. And then obviously we can provide a ton of the services as well through the virtual primary care practice that we have, the behavioral health practice, or even specialty care. So most people think about us as only a virtual practice, but I would say for the navigation services, a lot of what we're doing there is directing people to in-person services as well. My role in all that as the chief medical officer is a really a couple things. I mean, when I first came to the company, I thought a lot about the quadruple aim. So the goal there was to, you know, was to improve access to care. And I've always tried to do that. And I've worked, you know, my earlier career, I spent working with homeless veterans and had a mobile clinic. And so I've always felt like I've been trying to improve access to high quality care, but also, we're trying to improve patient experiences. So, and the quadruple aim part of that is actually doing that as well as making sure that these careers are sustainable for our clinicians, for our doctors and our nurse practitioners and our PAs and our social workers. And we want to do all of that at a sustainable cost, but reduce the administrative overhead for the clinicians as much as possible. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to balance there. As the chief medical officer in that kind of role, it's not an easy job. And especially when you add on the last piece, I would say, of what I bring to this is I've always approached these challenges through a social justice lens. So, you know, I always have wanted to make sure that the care that we provide is equitable, that the access that we're providing is to people from all different types of communities and all different socioeconomic backgrounds. And that's why I think virtual care is such a great way to do it, because it really does break down those zip code, you know, sort of zip code based healthcare quality clinical outcomes that we see. So I really think that this is an equity platform, and been talking a lot about that the last year.
That's amazing. And obviously, it sounds like, you know, what you do and what Included Health does really ties into what we'll be talking about today, which is the JAMA study on patient preferences for telehealth. So to dig into that study in particular, it looked at what consumers preferred more, telehealth or in-person care. And to kind of bring up some more information on that, some key points found from that study were that the racial and ethnic differences in telehealth use and consumers' continued interest in cost of telehealth versus in-person care. If you could maybe explain, what was found in that study, the racial and ethnic differences in telehealth use, and maybe some of the barriers, you know, what's causing these barriers, and how does cost per each type of visit play an effect in that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I did have a chance to see the study. I thought it was interesting. One thing, maybe just for all the participants in the study, when I looked at it, one of the things that I always look for is, you know, the context of the respondents. And I saw that the study period was in March of 2021. And I think we should just keep that in context, because what we have to remember about that time period was patients or the respondents had likely had a very big disruption in their usual traditional mode of care. So the places that they would normally go for care, they probably couldn't go to those. They may have delayed or deferred longitudinal care or healthcare maintenance visits. You know, I mean, I think a lot of papers, you know, were actually published along these lines, showing that a lot of people had deferred their care, and a lot more people, as we know, actually engaged virtual care. I think a McKinsey study showed that maybe 28 times more like people, you know, 28 times more people utilized virtual care or telemedicine services over that time period. So I think a little bit of the respondents, what we're probably seeing there is that, you know, they had gone a long time without being seen in person. And so I could definitely see in the context of, well, where do you want your next visit to be? I could see a lot of those people after that isolation of the last year saying, I'd actually prefer to be seen in person now, because it's been a while and I have some things I need to take care of. That's not a huge surprise. Now, the interesting thing about, you know, the individuals who responded who are from the Black community, you know, there in the context for those responses, I would say, you know, we're talking about a group of people who may, you know, who traditionally would have had lower levels of access to in-person care anyway, right? So I actually read a study last year, just doing some of my own research about this, in the city of Philadelphia. It's an older study, but it was talking about the city of Philadelphia. And if you're a member of the Black community in Philadelphia, you were 28 times more likely to live in a primary care shortage area. So there, you already have people, you know, Black people in this country who have limited access in person. And then they've gone through a global pandemic. So I don't know if it's, you know, super surprising that they're the ones who are saying, you know, maybe more likely to say, you know, I want to be seen in person now, because I've been out of the loop, or you know, issues of segregation of neighborhoods and so on have left me in a primary care shortage area, and you know, and I just need to be seen. I think the thing that really struck me about the study was that 2/3 of the individuals, so 2 out of 3 respondents, wanted some version of video visits to be in, you know, they want to do some portion of their care post pandemic via video or telemedicine visits, and I thought, you know, that's really remarkable from where we were pre-COVID. So people have clearly had the experience. They've had a positive experience. The clinicians also have had a positive experience. And so I think those are all important points to frame the results of the study.
Right. Thank you. And just to kind of clarify, maybe reiterate too. So in the Black community in specific, telehealth use, at least during that time of at least the survey we were speaking of, or just during, you know, prime COVID pandemic, that period, was it not much of use then? Telehealth use in the Black community more in specific?
I think it was a tremendous use, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was tremendous use, but in comparison to you know, to the general population, you know, asking, I think the way, you know, the way that that people were answering that question, I don't think it's a surprise because of the things that I said, that they may have, you know, being Black in America alters the perception of care as well, right? And so, and it's not because it's something inherent in the Black community, it's because the experience and the structural racism and the implicit bias with which the healthcare system has treated and met the Black community. Those are all things that really, I think, impact the way that people trust care and their level of hesitancy in seeking care. And so when you look at, you know, if you look at any healthcare condition or preventive health issue, you look at maternal fetal health, behavioral health access and utilization, in every one of those instances, utilization and levels of preventative screenings and so on, it's all lower in the Black community. And so that I would just say this is a more global problem, but for virtual care in general, what I see is that it really improved, you know, virtual care really improves access for these communities. And we have a little bit of experience with that. We actually published a paper last year with Harvard and RAND. It was in the Journal of Medical Internet Research, JMIR. And the study was originally intended to show you know, increase in COVID cases and how COVID had impacted colds and flus and low complexity care in a telemedicine practice, right? So they were reviewing our practice and auditing our practice and seeing, you know, how many, you know, what was the impact of all these different COVID cases. But what we actually found in the study, and the lead author on this was Lori Usher-Pines, was that we had a bigger increase in utilization for chronic conditions and behavioral health issues. And so that wasn't the focus of the study. That was sort of an aha moment. The other insight to answer your question was that we actually saw that in some cases, over 50% or around 50% of the people utilizing our services came from zip codes where their household the average household income is below $20,000 a year. And we know that members of the Black community are probably more likely to be in those zip codes. And so this is really you know, I think our experience when you zoom out and look at it, I actually think that we have a platform that enables people from these communities to be able to access care if they know about it, if they have digital, you know, if they're provided digital literacy and are told that it's there for them, and if they are told that they can find culturally concordant clinicians on the platform. For instance, in our case, 43% of our clinicians are Black, Indigenous people of color. You know, if they know that, I actually think it would be a much, you know, I think the survey results would change dramatically.
Wonderful. Thank you. Now to kind of just branch off of, you know, from the trends and results you saw in your study, this also may be a bit more repetitive, but to kind of dig deeper, what do you think these trends mean for the future of telehealth? Will this mean, you know, more improvements and more access? Or I guess, what do you see?
I think a number of people, both clinicians as well as patients, have now had the experience of a virtual visit. And so I think post-pandemic, you're going to see, I mean, already, you know, the use of virtual care, I think, has stabilized at 30 times higher, you know, 38x higher than what it was before the pandemic. And that was another McKinsey study that came out that highlighted that. So, you know, I think the mindset for doing something different and seeking care in a whole new way is, I think that has been established. COVID has been so disruptive. It has really, you know, I think it's forced a lot of people into that, no question. But now, you know, I think that people have had the experience and they might say, well, actually, you know, and that was a pretty good visit, you know, or I really liked my doctor. And we've, not to go through all the literature, but we've, you know, we published a study that showed that patients really do develop a relationship virtually with the clinicians in the practice and want to come and see that same clinician over and over again. And so I think that's just going to continue. It really has to, in my opinion, because our ability to afford our current healthcare system, I mean, it was really not, it's not a healthy story. You know, it's not a story of a healthy patient. Our healthcare system is a story of an ailing patient who's really exhibiting unsustainable behaviors. And so what we have to do is really look for new models and different delivery systems. And I think we really have a really good one here within virtual care. And so I don't think we can afford to go backwards. I don't think we can afford to ignore the patient experiences, the fact that doctors can see more patients on these platforms and that they actually really very much enjoy seeing patients and connecting with their patients remotely. So I think it's going to change our workforce for the better. I think it actually is going to enable people who have, I think it's going to be an equity platform for clinicians. We've seen that in our practice. It's going to enable doctors and nurse practitioners who might have in-home caregiver needs for someone in their home, like a parent and an aging parent and so on. I think they're going to be able to still practice medicine and be professionals, but also take care of, you know, those family responsibilities. I think virtual care is going to enable that. And we've certainly seen that in our practice, where 1 in 4 of our clinicians actually is a caregiver for someone in their home other than a child.
Wonderful. Thank you. And are you able to touch on cost?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. It's really it's an interesting thing, right? When you remove the cost of a brick and mortar, you know, of a brick and mortar footprint, you can actually reduce the overall cost of care. And we have seen this in multiple cases where the cost of our notifications need to be off there. Sorry about that. That's my COVID moment there. Where the cost of our visits actually come in below. And you can see this, our prices are listed publicly. So people can see that the cost of a visit for anyone, whether they have health insurance or not, they can use our service and it'll be cheaper than a typical in-office visit for the same type of condition. And during COVID, we also, we were the first virtual practice to enable patients with Medicare Part B to be able to have eligibility to see our clinicians virtually in the practice, so they could come. And that's because of some of the waivers that were put in place for Medicare Part B participants. They did not have to go to an originating site. And so these are things that that Congress and our policymakers could act on to really enable even more equitable care delivery on these types of platforms. So I think, and the question was about cost, and they'll realize that there are actually cost savings if the visits are done in the right way and are done by, I would say, telemedicine practices that are really focused on quality. They'll see cost savings.
Okay. And you mean more so like in the right way, as in?
Well, I think that there's different modalities that can use. So I don't want to say that it all has to be video or that it all has to be, or that, you know, I think there's a place and time for all of the different modalities. But I think that having a high quality visit is the most important thing. And so what we had seen early on in our practice was that equated to video visit. Video visits perform differently if the clinician and the patient do not know each other at first, and they're establishing the relationship virtually, the video visit is probably pretty important in being able to provide a high quality visit. Being able to see the patient is really important for that clinician. And I think the relationship that's formed is also, like, to be able to see each other, that's really important to the patient. So you have to start there. But I think if clinicians and patients already know each other, and then again, phone or async, you know, I think they can, it can be still be a high quality visit, but it just has to be in the right context, is what I was saying there. That's why I didn't want to evangelize about any one particular modality. It's just making sure that it's high quality in the right context, you know, where there's either an existing relationship or whether it's a new relationship. But all of these modalities can deliver high quality care.
Right. Got it. Makes sense. Now this is kind of like a two-part question. So how can telehealth be used to address health equity issues? And maybe if you can share some positive health outcomes associated with telehealth access.
Yeah. So, the policies that we're developing today of expanding telehealth access, those are going to have a huge impact on health equity. In our practice, I already told you, that we have a very representative practice. 43% of our clinicians are Black, Indigenous, people of color, 21% Black. In our behavioral health practice, a very high percentage identify as a member of the LGBTQ+ community. So what we have there is multi-state licensed clinicians who are able to cover a region of the country and really offer standardization of care and quality and develop relationships with patients in places where physically they would never be, right? They may never... That psychiatrist might not ever be in Lincoln, Nebraska, but they can care for patients in those communities and do a great job. Um, And so, you know, I think we're going to see, we're going to see really improvement in access to culturally concordant care. I mean, I think when more people start to use these modalities for that, we're going to see, many more opportunities, I would say, for traditionally minoritized populations to connect with someone who has a shared experience with them and might even look like them, or at least has had some training in cultural competency so that they can really deliver appropriate care to that individual. So I think we're really well set up for that. And so again, that's why I call this a health equity platform, because we can take representative members of our community from very different racial, ethnic, and religious backgrounds and so on. And we can distribute them around the country through multi-state licensure. And that's going to improve access to everyone.
Great. Thank you. And that's actually all I had for you about this topic. But if there's anything else that you'd like to address, that we didn't cover, that's important for our listeners to hear about.
Yeah, I think we covered a lot. I actually feel like we covered a lot. I mean, I think you we didn't go into anything policy wise. I don't know if the audience is interested in that.
Oh yes, that'd be great.
Well, I think so. I'll just say this. I think that we are at a critical moment. I think a lot of people would say, "Oh, it's the horse has left the barn. Virtual care is here to stay." That's true. There's no question about that. But it can take 10 years to make that journey, or it could take 5 years. It could take a long time, or we can really lean into this and really impact and transform how healthcare is delivered. But right now, we need to see, I think, action on the part of the House of Representatives and the Senate. They really need to make permanent some of these exceptions and waivers that were put into place during COVID, because they have the data to know that we were able to expand care to Medicare Part B members. More seniors will definitely adopt these modalities if they can use them remotely, and if someone just shows them how to establish and register an account, they can do it. They've all figured out how to Skype or Zoom or what have you, do virtual visits with their family members remotely. And so they can do clinician and doctor visits that way as well. And so, but I think we need the policies to really tell, people in my boat, people in my practice, and for me to know that we can invest more heavily in what we are doing here because the policies are permanent and they're going to allow us to improve access to care through virtual care means.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.